Welcome to the Travel Squad podcast, where adventure meets inspiration. We're your hosts. I'm Brittany.
I'm Kim.
And I'm Jamal. Together, we explore international destinations, hike epic national parks, and share unforgettable travel experiences with you, one passport stamp at a time.
Our mission is to inspire you to travel by showing you how you can make it work no matter your budget, schedule, or experience level.
We bring you along so that you can laugh, get excited, and start planning your own trip.
So grab your ticket and your passport.
And don't forget your travel insurance.
And get ready to embark on a new adventure with us around the globe.
Hello, fellow travelers.
Hey, Squad.
Hey.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Travel Squad podcast. Today, we're going to be following Kim and Brittany as they tell us all about their first epic backpacking trip to Havasupai Falls.
So Havasupai Falls has been on my bucket list for years. Probably started when Kim sent me an Instagram picture of the turquoise water and the red rocks. A long time ago, I added it to my ever-growing bucket list, but I really never made the effort to plan a trip there. So when we visited Kim back in January, Kim dropped the news that she applied for permits, and I immediately told her I'd be down to go. This trip was so much fun. It was also really, really challenging, probably one of the hardest trips I've ever taken. But with that being said, I would totally do it all over again. And I can't wait to share with you, Squatties, everything we learned along the way, because there was so much information that we didn't know going into this trip that I wish we would have known. And we're here today to provide you with some of that insight so that when you take this trip, you know all the ins and outs of it.
I totally agree. I have been reading blog posts about this epic adventure for years. I tried to get permits years ago and didn't make it in. I have read so much about it. I've seen so many pictures, so many videos, and I felt like I knew enough about it on this trip. But you're right, Brittany. There were so many things that I'm like, out of all the blogs I read, I never saw anything about this, particularly how hard the hike is to get in there with all that weight on your back. Like, I have a lot to say about that one.
Well, that's just Kim over 30. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, I'll tell you this. 2 weeks after, my knee is still messed up.
Ooh. Well, I'm just joking about you about the Kim over 30. I know it's a definitely challenging hike.
It is. And as I get closer to 35, we're going to have to change up the lingo here because I'm feeling it a lot more as I get closer.
It's going to be Kim nearing 40. Kim nearing 40.
But like Brittany said, it's so worth it. It's such a beautiful place. It literally, since I got back, I have felt so at peace in my mind from having no cell phone service for 4 days, being out in nature for 4 days, hearing streams of water constantly, like sleeping to that sound. In fact, Brittany even turned on her sound machine the first night in the tent. I was like, literally, it sounds like the stream right outside of our tent. We don't need the sound machine.
So I turned it off. I did.
Oh, you carried some extra weight.
I know.
Then,
Brittany.
Yeah, but it was so worth it. I would do it all over again. And I'm just so excited to talk about it because it was the trip of a lifetime.
Well, I've heard a lot about it from Brittany, of course, and I'm excited to talk about it in this episode to hear you two just like retelling the trip and getting excited with each other about the experience. But before we really get into anything, why don't you tell our listeners and Squatties who don't know, what is Havasupai Falls? I mean, I mentioned that you have to backpack in, so why don't you give a little context of what it is, where it is, and how you get there?
It is in Arizona, in the Grand Canyon, on an Indian reservation. It's about 4 hours driving from Las Vegas, maybe a bit more to Phoenix, and those would be the closest major airports to fly into if you're going to be coming from somewhere. And you literally hike into the Grand Canyon, 10 miles.
Yes, so you start at the rim, you ascend all the way down, you hike through the canyon, you hike through the Indian reservation. And this is climbed down once you get down to the very bottom of the canyon. And then you continue to descend down to where the campground area is. But from the top to the campground, it's 10 miles. Depending on where you camp within that area, the camping ground is another mile. So if you get the last camping spot, then you're hiking 11 miles each way.
And what's the payoff? Why are you hiking 10 miles, maybe 11, into the canyon? What is down there that you want to see?
Some of the most gorgeous waterfalls you will ever see in your life. This water is unreal turquoise blue. If you see pictures of it online, we're going to have them on our website, travelsquadpodcast.com. It looks fake. It looks like it's been edited, but it's not. In real life, it's this turquoise blue, gorgeous water, huge towering waterfalls, like so, so tall, against towering cliffs of the canyon in this beautiful red rock. So the juxtaposition of that and these like blooming green trees when we went in March, absolutely so beautiful. And the fact that you can only get to it through that way, and we'll talk about a couple other ways you can get in, it's like you have to work for it and then you're rewarded of this magical, sacred land. And it really feels like that when you're there.
Well, I'm really excited for you guys to dive deep. I'm just going to give a tiny little bit of a spoiler. I know you said maybe there's a few other ways. One of those other ways is not a vehicle. So get that out of your mind. There's no way that you are taking a car driving down there. So you got to go by foot. Asterisk for maybe another way, but we'll talk about that in just a second.
And one thing I do want to talk about before we get into that is why Jamal was not on this trip.
Oh, great question. You know, you hit us with it in January, like Brittany had said, when we were out there visiting you in Austin, recording a few episodes. And I know you ladies have really, really been talking about this trip and taking it, and it just never really got planned. And kudos to you, Kim, for taking the initiative to be like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to apply for permits. I love it. Love the initiative. When you said it, though, like I was excited, but also like,
he was nervous. He was scared.
No, it's not nervous at all. Please,
and you should be.
Please, 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 please. Give me some credit, ladies. You know, like I complain sometimes on certain things, but I would have handled this one just fine. I'm sure about it. This just didn't captivate me. I don't know what to say.
What?
Like the photos are beautiful. I'm not going to disagree with that. But like, I didn't really, at this moment in time, really want to go on the trip. And we know I'm a little bitch in getting into cold water. You guys went here in March. And there's going to be winter runoff. I mean, this is in the Grand Canyon. So that's the Colorado River that's making these waterfalls.
Well, actually, the waters stay around 70 degrees all year round.
Well, if you told me that, I could have been possibly sold.
No, you wouldn't have been.
I don't
need this negativity,
you know,
though.
But so. My honest thought was the girls are really into it. Let them have a good time. That was honestly my thought. Like, I wasn't dying to go on this one. In hindsight, you know, they say it's 2020 and maybe I probably should have gone, but I'm not upset that I didn't at this moment in time.
Wait till the episode is over.
Yes.
I was so excited that, well, I was sad that Jamal wasn't going to go, but when he told me he wasn't, he kept asking me like, are you sure you don't want me to go? Like, and I knew that if I forced him, he wouldn't enjoy his time as much. And I was really excited to have a girls trip because girls trips are really special. They can be really fun. So I was like, you know what? We're just going to make this a girls trip and it's going to be great. But Kim, as we dive into the episode, we're going to talk about permits and preparation. And I feel like that's where most blog posts that we read focused on, those two areas, the prep and the permits. And I think people are intimidated by a 10-mile hike where you have to hike everything in. So that's where the focus, where we saw most of it be. But we're going to talk about everything else you don't hear about in those blog posts.
Yeah, I have a bone to pick with these blog posts. So the permitting used to be a very complex process where you would have to come on at a certain time, and then it was like getting a festival ticket. You get in line and it's like a lottery system. This year they changed it, and I just happened to see another Instagram post of someone we follow with the podcast handle, and they were advertising or letting people know that this new pre-sale option was coming out. And so I just happened to see it, and I was a couple weeks ahead of it. And so I made a note on my calendar for the day that it was going to go live. And when that day came up, it was sometime in January, to put a booking on for pre-sale, it's $15 per person that's non-refundable. And then you select certain dates. Every reservation is 4 days, 3 nights. And so I selected some dates in March because one of my other friends, OCDs, who was going to be on spring break during that time, I was like, oh, perfect. If it hits during her spring break, she can come. I think it lets you pick like 4 different options. And then there's also a button you can click for any available slot. So I did a couple in March, I think a couple in October or November timeframe, because I didn't want to go in the heat of summer. Hiking in the Arizona 100 plus degree summer, even though there's waterfalls at the end. No.
Well, not only that, with 30 plus pounds on your back going in and out of the canyon for that 10 miles. Oh, my God.
Sounds like hell.
Yeah.
So I submitted for 4 pre-sale permits. I don't recall if there's a limit on how many. I just picked 4 because I figured That's probably a good amount. Let's just say the three of us are going and then one other person. So I thought four was a good amount. So I paid for the presale. And then they were going to announce if you got the presale tickets sometime in February. And that date came. And then all of a sudden, my credit card was charged for the full amount. And I got an email saying, you got your first pick of dates. And that's how the presale worked. I did see that after presale was announced, a few weeks later, they sent an email out saying that if you wanted to cancel or transfer your booking, that there was a deadline to do that. Previously, the Havasupai reservation system did not let you cancel bookings. It would be a use it or lose it situation. So I don't know if that was just for this first year of doing the presale and working out the kinks, or if that's something they're going to continue with. But that was an option in case you were like, oh, I put in for the presale, but now I'm getting cold feet and I don't want to do it. There was that option in 2024. Then if you did not get involved with the presale, which I highly recommend because it was very, very easy, the public sales do open up in March and then you go back into that lottery system.
You know, after we came back from this hike, one of my coworkers saw that our Instagram posts. And so she applied and she immediately found out that she got permits.
Oh, amazing. So it sounds like they're making it a lot easier than it used to be.
Yeah. But she said that the only dates available for her to choose were like October, November dates.
So I think October would still be good.
Yeah.
November might start to get cold at night. I can see that happening. But you mentioned a little bit about the permit process, Kim. Let me know if I'm wrong and how I may have heard this from Brittany, if I heard it correctly or not. When you put in the requests for the presale permits, you know, that $15, when you were finally approved, apparently there's places where you can camp. And then on the reservation, they supposedly have a lodge. So you don't really have to have a camping grounds and tent. You could stay kind of in a hotel. Did you think that that was for both of those and then they just put you wherever? Or are you supposed to specifically, if you want the lodge, pick the lodge? Because I thought you wanted to stay in the lodge. Mm-hmm. And did you F up on that one and not choose the lodge?
Now that I think back to the presale, I don't think lodge was a part of the presale. It's only campground spots. Lodge did open up with public sale in March. And here's the thing about the lodge. It's in the village. The village is 2 miles from the campground. There's a couple of waterfalls that you see during that portion. But then once you're at the campground, at the other end of it, there are 2 other amazing, gorgeous, crazy waterfalls. And it's a 5-mile loop to see those. So if you're hiking from the village every day to see the waterfalls, you're adding on a lot of time. And I think, I don't know, even though the lodge is a bed, there is a shower, it's not necessarily a hotel. It's still pretty bare bones. There is a cafe in the village, and so you have access to food and whatnot. But I really would encourage the camping experience because I went for the waterfalls, but the camping also made this trip so unique, so special, so life-changing. The camaraderie, the experience of like eating freeze-dried food.
For the first time ever. And, you know, Kim and I have not been camping. Well, I have not been camping since 2016 on the Inca Trail. And that was a luxury camping experience. Kim said that her last time camping was like back in 2019. So if you haven't been camping for a while, you can still make this happen. We totally hacked it. We made the best of it. We had a great time. So I also would recommend the camping experience. I think being at camp and hearing the water in the background run every night and being with fellow campers and being close to like all of the waterfalls made it worth it. But you do have to work to get into those waterfalls. And we're going to talk about all of the options to get down into the canyon.
I'll say one thing about pricing for permits. So it was $455 per person for the campground, 3 nights, 4 days. The lodge is quite a bit more expensive than that. I don't know the exact number, but you are looking at a higher price. So for that reason, plus the experience, I recommend campground.
Good to know.
So there are like 3 primary ways to get into the canyon, but you can kind of mix and match these as well. First option is to hike in and out with all of your stuff, all of your gear that you're going to need. You need enough water to get you to camp, and they recommend about 3 liters. They actually said 3 to 4. I think we packed about 2 to 3 per person. And then if you're going to hike in with all of your stuff, that means you're hiking in with your tent and all of your supplies and all of your food. So our bags weighed anywhere from 35 to 40 pounds each.
Maybe more. I don't know. Mine was so heavy.
It did not. It was
mine
not.
Was like 50 pounds.
No, it was not.
Mine was like 100 pounds.
Kim's is probably the lightest.
Perception is reality. If it felt like 100 pounds, it was 100 pounds.
Okay, then it was like 1,000 pounds.
You could also choose to hike in and use a pack mule to carry your stuff in and out and just hike in with a day pack.
And this is what I would recommend because it would actually be a very enjoyable hike if you did it this way. Of course, an animal is using it. But one thing about the pack mules, if you're going to want to leverage this option, you do have to book them in advance. It's $400 per mule round trip, and they can carry four bags that are about 30 pounds each. We did find out along the trip, and I didn't read this in any of the blog posts, that you can get a mule for the way out, and you can book it while you're there, cash only, $200.
The day before.
The day
before. You have to book it at least the day before.
You have to go into the village to book it the day before.
So Kim would recommend leaning on a pack mule. I didn't agree with that, you know, with like some of the pack mules we saw in the reservation. I just wouldn't feel comfortable putting my bag on a pack mule, but we have different opinions and that's completely okay.
The other thing about the pack mules on timing, you have to have your bags at the pack mule by 7 a.m. either way you go, in or out. Coming out, I was considering this, but we were on a time limit. We wanted to be out and on the road by 11 a.m. So the pack mules, even though you put your bag there at 7 a.m., they said they're guaranteed to be out by 2 p.m. So there's kind of a time frame of when it could come out, depending on when your bag gets there and when it gets taken out. So if you're on a time crunch, just keep that in mind.
The last option is the luxury option. You can helicopter in and out, or one or the other. So you can hike in and then you can helicopter out.
Who's gonna helicopter in and hike out? Let's be honest.
No, but you can helicopter in and out and do both and just have this very luxury glamping experience, I guess. And then there are people who helicopter in and out and still use the pack mules to get the most amount of stuff down to the campground. I think that's a little excessive, but that's just my opinion.
They're trying to do a real glamping experience. If they're like, I need to use helicopter and have some of my storage stuff and supplies and then also the mule for supplies. So yeah. They're trying to make a real grand experience.
Some people really had big groups. And if I did it again, this is what I would do. I would do the pack mule. We'd get a big tent where all of us could sleep in the tent, get a blow up air mattress, like a queen size air mattress that everybody could sleep on. I would have nice things because we struggled to we didn't struggle. We had to work to find a backpack, a jet boil, like all of our items that we needed. But if you didn't want to buy new stuff or borrow stuff from friends, then you could use your regular stuff and just leverage the pack mule to help bring it in and out.
So you mentioned the price earlier on the pack mule to use it. What's the price looking like for a helicopter? Because I can imagine the helicopter would be expensive. And then, I mean, I already kind of know what the price is because I heard, but just so our squaddies can hear this, because is the helicopter not cheaper than the pack mule? I mean, you said $200 for the pack mule. I felt like the helicopter was cheaper, was it not?
Yeah, and I was surprised by that too. Like, okay, I had a really, really hard time on that hike, so I wanted to take the helicopter out. I didn't even know that was an option, okay? Bloggers out there were not saying anything about the helicopter that I read. There is a Facebook group for Havasupai Falls that I highly recommend. There's tons of good information. You can ask questions in there. They are talking about the helicopter there. It was $100 each way in cash, or if you paid with credit card, which they do accept, it's a $10 fee. So for me, I paid $110 to fly out on the helicopter on that day. The only thing is with the helicopter, you can't rely on it. It does not run every day. I'm not certain the days. Someone had said it was Thursday, Friday, Monday, Tuesday, but that can change. I don't know their schedule or if it will stay the same forever. If weather is poor, the helicopter will not run. The day before we flew out, actually, there was a snowstorm at the top of the rim, so the helicopter was canceled all day. It started running probably around 3 p.m., so you really can't rely on it. Hiking out is the only way you actually can rely on.
But nevertheless, if you're able to snag that helicopter, $100, 110, depending on what a deal if and you really want to do that.
Your backpack too.
Yes, yeah. I know. Oh my God. It was like literally the saving grace of my life. It made my day. We started hiking out around 5 a.m. It took about an hour to get to the village, that 2 miles. And then we waited in line. There was probably 12 or so people in line in front of us by like 6-ish in the morning. And we waited there. So how you sign up is there's a man who will show up with a book, and there's like a podium right where you would enter the gate to get into the helipad. Mm-hmm. That man will show up around 8 a.m. and start putting names on the list. So if you're in line, you get your name on the list, you pay the money, and then he'll start calling people when the helicopter shows up. The one thing about the village is times are not certain. Like in America, if we say 8 a.m., if you're at 8:01, Brittany's like, where are you? That's not how it is in the village. The village, they're like 8:30, 9:30. Like it's very loose. And so we got all these different times of when the copter was going to start running, but it pretty much started running around 9:30, I think.
Yeah. But you know what? I want to clarify for our squatties, because this whole time you said we started hiking at 5 a.m. We got to the line for the helicopter.
I mean, me and Osiris. Now, yes. Brittany and Savannah are a little crazier.
Yes. Savannah and I started hiking. What was it? We started hiking at 4:23 a.m. We got up at like 3:30. We started packing up the tents. Well, we all did. And then Savannah and I were starting to hike by 4:23. I think we like looked just for confirmation, and we made it to the top before 10 o'clock. So we actually ended up beating Kim and Osiris to the rim of the canyon
by about 15 minutes. And for the helicopter too, it started running around 9:30 or so. Being about 12th in line, I was out by 10:15, just for records.
And the helicopter only takes, what, like 5 minutes to get from the bottom to the top?
Yeah, it's about a 5-minute ride, and it's so beautiful to see. You rise out from a crack in the earth, and when you're above it, it looks like a crack. You can't even see that there's a whole canyon of nature down there. So if you do take the helicopter ride out, seeing it from above is really pretty.
Well, so those are the ways in or out. Let's talk about the preparation, because I don't know about you, Kim. Of course, I know all four of you ladies who went on this were on a chat thread about what we need, who's carrying what, this, that. But I feel like every day there was always at least a 10-15 minute conversation with me and Brittany of her telling me like, I need this, I'm going to order that, what do you think of this, blah, blah. Like she was really prepping her pack. So let's talk about the preparation of everything going into this hike and what you need to bring in.
Yeah, so Kim did start that group thread, and I want to preface this by saying it was four girls. It was Kim, she invited me, she already mentioned Osiris, who was on her spring break during this time. And Kim actually had a different trip planned with those CDs during this time that they had to cancel to take this trip. And then Kim also invited her cousin, Savannah. I only knew Kim going into this trip. I didn't know CDs. I didn't know Savannah. So they were new to me. So this group chat was my first conversation with them about how we're going to prep and get ourselves ready for this trip. But to prep for the trip, we were going to hike everything in, and the goal was to hike everything out too. But so when you're selecting a backpack, you want a really good, sturdy backpacking backpack with a frame, and you want to make sure your pack weighs under a certain amount. Ideally, it should be under 20% of your body weight or less. Less is better. And if you're about 140 pounds, you're looking at about carrying a maximum of 28 pounds. Our bags were definitely heavier than that.
Way heavier than that. The backpacks themselves are kind of heavy because they're big and they have frames in them. For anyone that's not a backpacker, like none of us, I don't think, maybe Savannah, but the rest of us had never been backpacking. So we didn't own backpacking backpacks. I bought mine for $40 off of Facebook Marketplace. And I would highly recommend going that route because they're already broken in. You can get a good quality backpack for less than you would pay for it new. Osiris bought hers off Amazon, brand new for $40, but it wasn't a good backpacking backpack. It was smaller. It didn't have, I don't even think it had the frames on it.
No.
So I'd recommend getting a used one off of Facebook Marketplace. And then, hey, if you're not into backpacking, you can always resell it thereafter.
Yeah. I borrowed mine from my brother, which was fantastic because he's taken it on. He's a little bit bigger than me, but we adjusted it to my like frame size. and it was perfect. And I knew it would work well. And it was a pretty big backpack. I think it was like 65 to 75 liters. And that's a pretty good size for what you need for this trip.
I would highly recommend you not only practice packing your backpack, but you walk or hike with your heavy pack on, because hiking alone will not prepare you for this hike with all that weight on your back. That weight adds up so fast. But if you can practice with that weight on your back, like, I wish I would have done this. I didn't do any preparation. But if I would have practiced with, say, 50 pounds on my back on my treadmill at home every day, I probably would have been a lot in better shape. Or I might have just hurt my knee before the trip. I don't know.
You also want to make sure your backpack is packed correctly. You want the heavier items on the bottom and that you are adjusting the straps properly. When you connect the hip straps around your waist, that's going to alleviate a lot of the pressure on your shoulders and your back. And making sure that those are placed correctly is essential for making it down to this hike without hurting.
Also, for preparation for booking things, we mentioned if you're going to get the mule, you can book that ahead of time. If you are doing the copter, you can book that ahead of time. If you are going to do what we did, and I would highly recommend this, book your hotel for the night before ahead of time as well, so that you can stay as close to the trailhead as possible. We stayed at the very closest hotel and it was still an hour away, but you're definitely going to want to do that so you don't make your first day even longer than it needs to be.
And if you guys are girly girls and you care about appearance, you can always get a lash lift and tint and an eyebrow lamination and tint before the trip. Kim and I both did that.
Oh, I would highly recommend that. I would even recommend like an IPL photo facial so that you have like glowing skin.
You know, like when Brittany told me she was doing this for the trip, I was like, well, why are you doing that for the trip? She's like, we're going to be backpacking. I'm not going to be taking makeup. I got to look good for the photos. Like, this is going to give me just like a makeup appearance without having done makeup. So I'll be looking good. I'm just like, oh my gosh. But you know what? It makes sense. So like you guys said, for the girly girls out there, maybe go ahead and do that so that you can look good. You got to do it for the gram, right?
Yeah, exactly. You also need to test out all of your equipment before going. Set up your tent. Make sure you have all of your parts. Make sure that you're not missing anything. Make sure that you can set it up by yourself or with a friend. Test out your Jetboil. There were two girls on the trip who did not test out their Jetboil before the trip, and they blew up two propane tanks.
And you're not talking about the two girls that came on with us. You're talking about ladies that you met on the
Yes. And they came up to us the first night with their poor pot of little water. And they're like, can we steal a boil? And of course, we invited them. And we actually had dinner with them like every night.
I'm sure our squatties could figure out what it is. But when you say Jetboil, but just let everybody know. Because of course, if you're backpacking, there's no food. You can't make fires. What is the purpose of this and why do you need it?
Yeah, so you're not even allowed to have a campfire at Havasupai Falls. So a Jetboil is like a makeshift stove. So think of a mini propane tank, and then there's like this little screw-on stovetop, essentially, and you can put a pot on there and you can boil your water. Jetboil is also a brand, and so they do have like their own like canisters that, or systems, I should say. But we just use like the Jetboil like stovetop add-on and then used our water boil from there.
One thing about the camping reservations, there will be a trip leader. And in this trip, I was the trip leader, of course. But everyone has to make an account. And when you make an account on the Havasupai Falls reservation system, you have to put in your emergency contact. And so then it gives you a proof of account with a QR code. You don't need to print that, but you do need at least a screenshot of it, so that when you check in, they can check it. When we checked in, they actually didn't check anybody's, but they do require it in the instructions. So for everyone in the group, you need that proof of account. So just make sure you have that. And whether they check it or not is beside the point, but you do need to make it.
Yeah, you don't want to be there and not have it on a day that they do decide to check it, right?
Exactly. Or, I mean, because it puts in your emergency contact, you don't want to need that emergency contact and then it not be on file.
Very true, too.
It also said that we could print or screenshot our camping reservation. I would say it'd be better to print it. It also served as our parking pass when we were at the top, so that came in handy. Otherwise, we had to like hand fill out a form. But Savannah had come prepared. She had printed it out. And lastly, I would say for the preparation piece, make sure you're downloading offline maps for the drive because a lot of the drive we didn't have service once we left the last like city called Kingman. And then make sure you have some of the trails from All Trails Plus downloaded in advance. All Trails Plus, if you don't have it, is a paid subscription, but it's so worth it to see like how close you are to the campground, how to get to Mooney Falls, like how far you are away from Mooney and Beaver Falls. So all of those things, like I would recommend downloading the offline map for the drive and then downloading the trail maps from All Trails.
One last thing I'll say about preparation is to clip your toenails, because you're going to be hiking downhill and you're going to have your toes cramming into your shoes as you do. And we all know that toenails are known to fall off during hikes. They can get clipped onto things, as we will talk about later. And you just come prepared. Clip your toenails.
I love that, Kim. So let's get into the packing portion. We are going to link. We actually have made an Amazon store shop with our Havasu Pie Falls recommendations, like packing list. But packing and coordinating with who you're going with is so important. We brought way too much stuff. You don't need more than one first aid kit. You don't need more than one soap. You don't need more than one sponge. Like, those things you think aren't big, like, oh, I'm just going to pack a 3-ounce thing. Those things add weight, and they add weight quickly. So I would coordinate with your group. I mean, you're only there for 4 days, 3 nights, and the first day and the last day, you're most of the time, you're hiking. So you really don't need as much stuff as you think you do.
Yeah, we had a shared note going and we listed everything that we needed to bring. I really wish that we would have assigned a person to bring each thing. Like, Osides, you bring the pocket knife. Brittany, you bring the jet boil, and kind of just do it like that. Because yeah, not only did we have duplicates, but some of the stuff we didn't even use.
Yeah, we brought 2 hammocks because the night before, Kim was getting crazy. Kim was like that. I pick up the hammock. I was like, I really don't want to add this to my bag. It's like, 2-3 pounds. And Kim's like, oh, it's so light. She goes, we're going to luxury. And she shoves it into her pack.
I didn't say it like that.
It was like very passionate. We didn't even use that hammock. We used Savannah's hammock like a handful of times. But you're not at camp a long time. You're like out exploring the day or you're hiking. So you're not going to have like a ton of downtime unless like you specifically make a day for that and skip out on some of the other things or start your day really early. One thing that I would highly recommend, though, is there is only one water spigot in camp, which is like the whole mile. And so we brought a collapsible water reservoir that I found on Amazon. It's like 4 liters. That was super clutch, I feel.
That was good. We had that. And then we also had the hanging reservoir that Savannah brought, which was cool. It hung from a tree and then it had a little tube that put water into things. The one that you had to like use your hands and tilt it over.
Yeah.
Either one of those would work, but at least have one of them.
Yes. So clothing, you know, originally I was like, I needed an outfit per day. Kim's like, I need 5 pairs of underwear per day in case I shit myself.
That's always needed. That's always needed,
though. But no, not on this trip.
No, honestly, I'd go commando on this trip if it would save weight.
You need like 2 to 3 pairs of socks, 3 pairs of underwear, 1 pair of pants, 1 pair of shorts, 2 to 3 tops, an outfit for camp, beanie, gloves, and then
a swimsuit.
Bathing suit, yes. And then, of course, you need your essential supplies.
Well, this...
So this is where my weight was definitely 50 pounds because I brought 3 pairs of socks, 10 pairs of underwear, 3 pairs of pants, a pair of pajamas, 2 shorts, 2 swimsuits.
A sweater or puffy jackets.
A sweater, a fleece, and a puffy jacket. Yes, yes, definitely bring a jacket because when we went in March, there was a day that it was really rainy and cold. There was the last night we were there was very, very cold.
Yes. And then you're packing in and out your essential supplies, your tent, your sleeping bag. Highly recommend an inflatable for better comfort. Kim and I had my brother's like not inflatable ones that are just like the egg cushion type ones. Not that great, but we survived. An inflatable pillow, a sleeping bag. Make sure it goes down to the appropriate temperature. We had ones that went down to like 20 to 40 degrees.
And on the first night, it was pretty warm. I actually slept with it unzipped and I had shorts on and I was okay. And then the second night, it got a little bit colder. And the third night, it was very, very cold. So the sleeping bag was amazing. I had the hood on. I was fully in it, all cuddled up. And I would highly recommend the appropriate temperature sleeping bag.
on cold night, I bet those sleeping bags where they swallow you like a little baby, you know, and you have that little hoodie on there, keeps you nice and toasty. You're going to want that for sure on any backpacking adventure, I feel like.
Yes. And then you need a way to make food or hot water. So we had our Jetboil stove, our propane tanks. We brought two. You need a headlamp or a flashlight. Headlamp's going to be a little bit better because then you can be hands-free. You need at least, depending on the size of your group, if you're a group of four, we probably could have done with two mess kits and not four, which are your little pot, your bowl, your cups, your silverware are. You need a water bladder for your day pack, and then you need a lightweight day backpack. I used a dry bag that I used for hiking the Narrows, and I think you did too, Kim.
Yes.
And that was super essential and easy. Mine was super lightweight, so that worked out really well.
I would also recommend a lightweight towel. You brought one that was for backpacking that folded up very small. I brought our Turkish towel, and either one works. There's just one, the one that you had brought saves a little bit more space.
And then Kim, if you're going in a cold month, Kim had brought some hot warmers to put in like your shoes and your gloves and in our sleeping bags, and that was fantastic.
Yeah, that was a panic purchase as I saw the temperatures dropping in the forecast. And I was like, oh my God, it's going to be 29 degrees one night. I'm going to freeze my ass off. So I bought these pack of hot warmers off of Amazon. We have them on our Amazon list that we'll link out. And it came with big ones, hand ones, and feet ones. I used every single one of them. I even shared with some of you all. I put them in the sleeping bag. Like you said, it really kept things warm at night. And then on that last day when it was like really, really cold, that was my saving grace. It was so nice to like keep my fingers warm. The other way I used it that I will mention, my knee got really messed up on the hike down. It was hurting so badly to extend it, to move it, like I couldn't walk right. On the last night, I actually used one of the sticky hot warmers and stuck it on my knee. And I woke up, my knee felt better than it had the whole trip.
Good hack, Kim.
Oh, essential ibuprofen. You will need it. None of the packing lists mention this, but ibuprofen, I was on a strict regimen of ibuprofen morning, noon, and night.
Kim, nearing 40.
We also took magnesium at night to sleep, and I don't think we needed any other meds, but it's always good to bring the basics.
Yes. And then, of course, we had to pack in our food. I overpacked my food. I want to say 5 freeze-dried meals because I was thinking lunch and dinner on a few of the days. But in reality, you're out during the day. So we ended up like snacking for lunch and not really eating like a real lunch and only really utilizing the freeze-dried meals for dinner. So we brought those Clif Bars, beef jerky, and then a few snacks, and liquid IV is all that you really need.
Well, when you say snacks, what are you talking about snacks?
Protein bars. I overpacked here and I like brought chocolate covered almonds,
which were good.
They were delicious. And then I brought like little fruit bites that were covered with yogurt.
Okay.
Yeah, we had chips, we had crackers, we had more ramen that we didn't probably need.
Oh yeah, I forgot. I did bring 2 ramen and I like forced myself to eat one.
Instant coffee, I brought more than what was necessary. We had a thing of coffee creamer that we didn't quite finish.
Well, I think it's that fine balance, right? You got to really worry about the weight, but you also don't want to be underprepared. And
I know.
I feel like food is one of those ones where it's just like, yeah, the weight will add up, but you'd rather have more food than not. And maybe some of the other items, it's like, okay, maybe Kim's 10 underwears and her big jacket that she had on. Those are maybe the things that you want to lay off on for more space for food. That's a good thing to overpack, though.
Here's the thing with food. We asked our squatties for tips, and someone did say, don't bring as much food. Like, you won't need as much food as you think you will. And I took that to heart, and I think I did bring the appropriate amount of food. But say you didn't, and you needed to eat. 2 miles from the campground is the village. There is a full cafe in the village that's open from like 8-ish to I think like 5-ish. They serve breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I actually got a breakfast burrito there as we were waiting for the helicopter. Really good. Huge. They have burgers. They have wraps. They have sandwiches. They have really, really good strawberry lemonade. So there's that. There's also a fry bread stand at the top of right before you descend into the campground, by that waterfall, the Havasu Falls. And it's not open all the time, so it's a little hit or miss, but they are usually open every day for a certain amount of hours. So I really don't think you're going to starve. You don't need to overpack.
There was the grocery store. We walked into the grocery store quickly.
That's right.
And they did have, you know, easy to grab items. So you're not going to starve on this trip. But I really don't feel like the research we did really like alluded to that. So we were just very concerned about what we were going to bring and what we were going to eat.
A couple other things I want to say about packing. On the jet boils and the gas that you need for them, bring your own gas. Definitely recommending that you do that. But in the event that something goes wrong, we did discover that there is a ranger station right by the first bathroom at the campground, and they have a table full of stuff that people have left or donated, tons of gas canisters. And there was also some other stuff food-wise and supplies-wise if you're really desperate. There were some freeze-dried meals left out on the table, and I'm not recommending to leave anything, and I'm not recommending to rely on it, but I am saying when we were there in March 24, we did see a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to put it, Kim. So, you know, finally, after all of this prep and getting all of your supplies and getting everything ready, the trip is here. So the day before, like Kim said, we went to the closest hotel to the canyon, which is called the Grand Canyon Cabros Inn. And that's actually where you pick up your permits as well. We had booked a 2-bedroom bunkhouse because we wanted the space to be able to like repack our stuff and not be super cramped in and get a good night of sleep before our hike and stuff. But they couldn't find the keys upon check-in. So they upgraded us for free to their 3-bedroom huge ranch house with a full kitchen, huge living room, like 3 different bathrooms. It did not have cell service, but there was Wi-Fi.
That house was really nice. And once you get out there, you're kind of in the middle of nowhere. So Kingman was the closest city as we were driving that had like good restaurants and stuff to see and do. Once we actually got to our hotel, there's nothing around there. There was a restaurant at that hotel. Mm-hmm. We did not patron it, so I can't speak for the quality of the food, but that's an option if you want to exercise it.
And Kingman's about an hour away from this hotel, and the hotel is about an hour away from the trailhead. So when you're leaving, the closest option for food is going to be about like 2 hours away. So the day of, we wanted to get to the trailhead and start hiking pretty early. So you have to consider that you're about an hour from the hotel to the trailhead. They will check your permits as you drive in, and we recommend not starting the hike any later than 8 a.m. I would actually like to start hiking earlier than that.
Yeah, I mean, considering how long it took me to get to the campground, I would say starting early would be good so that you still have time to enjoy the afternoon and evening after you rest at camp. All of the blogs that I read said it took 4.5 hours to hike. And I just want to say that's some bullshit. It does not take 4.5 hours. And if it does, you're either a superhuman or you do not have your heavy backpack on your back. Because it took me 7.5 hours.
Damn, Kim. So let's talk about the hike down. So there is a bathroom at the trailhead, parking at the trailhead. The trail actually wasn't as crowded as I thought it was going to be, at least when we went in March. When we started, there was not a lot of people on the trail yet. Like Kim said, a lot of the blogs said 4.5 hours. I am like debatable if that's doable or not. Definitely if you pack a pack mule, definitely less than that if you take the helicopter in. But to actually hike it with all of the weight on your back, Savannah and I, it took us 6 hours. We could have probably done it in about 5-ish, but we took probably 3 or 4 different breaks to see if Kim and Ophidius would catch up to us. And each of those breaks were like 20 to 30 minutes waiting to like, are they around the corner? Like, oh, we'll wait for them at the village. They got to be here soon. They did not catch up to us. So we ended up making the executive decision, Savannah and I, to continue on and make it to our campground and to camp. So without those breaks, we probably could have made it in about 5 hours. And we hiked out in less than 5 hours or 5.5 hours. So, and that's the harder part. So I guess it could definitely be done.
I don't think so. No. I can't. Brittany, you go hiking like at least once a month. And yes, you do these long hikes often. I like hiking, but I'm not into these long hikes anymore. And I definitely... I definitely do not hike with 50 pounds on my back ever. I literally took so many breaks. I thought I was going to die. I cried. I laid down and just thought about staying there and just seeing if someone would pick me up. Because once you get to the village, you start to see these like Can-Am type vehicles going through the village. And I'm like, please pick me up and take me.
She was just put your thumb out and give a little hitchhike at that point in time.
Savannah and I were making bets on who cried first, you or CDs. Like, you think one of them started crying? Like, for sure one of them did.
So leaving the hour from the campground to the village, it felt like nothing. But by the time you get to the village, you are already exhausted. And that village is long. You're like, okay, I didn't realize it would actually be like a little town down there. But it really is. And so the hike from the village to the campground, after already being 8 miles in and feeling like death, it's the longest 2 miles ever. And you don't know when it's going to end. So you're like, where is this place? I'm going to die.
Well, I had my offline maps. And so I was like, oh, we're like pretty close to this portion. So Savannah and I were like motivated by looking at it in a sense. But yeah, when you get to the village, the way that the maps that I saw online portrayed it was like, here's a little X on the map. There's the village. And you think you're just going to like walk right through in this tiny little thing. And it's not. And like, it is a like half mile walk or longer through that village, at least. And then it's 2 miles from there to the campground. So by the time you reach like the start of the village, you're like, oh, it's only 2 more miles, but it's not from the start of the village. It's like 2 miles from the end of the village.
Mm-hmm. When I went through the village, there was live music going on. There were people everywhere. There were kids coming from school. There was like tons of different hikers who were sitting in there waiting. So it was a very lively village.
Yes. I would recommend starting the hike early so you're not hiking in the sun. A lot of the hike is sun exposed, so just be mindful of that, especially as it warms up this summer season. Make sure you're wearing like hats and sunscreen and hydrating adequately. The terrain's pretty rocky at first. There's a lot of switchbacks early on going down from the rim, and then it also gets pretty sandy at some points.
Yeah, you're hiking in the sand with 50 pounds on your back. It's like unreal. You're like, really? After now this?
And then I didn't know this in advance, but like there's a wash where like water used to flow through, but there's an actual trail too. And so you want to be mindful to like stay on the trail and not to hike the whole thing in the wash, because the wash is like really rocky. And that's where all of the pack mules go through as well. And you have to stop and give way to them every time they come down. So just be mindful of that. But once you get past the village, that's where the magic starts to happen. You start to see waterfalls. Between the village and the campground, there are 3 waterfalls, 50-foot, Navajo, and Havasupai. At 50-foot, there's a bathroom. So that was one of the stops Savannah and I made. It was nice to take our packs off here. And we took our packs off and tried to wait for Kim and OCDs, but that just didn't happen. And then the last waterfall that you see before coming down to camp, and it's like the saving grace. You just like hear the angels sing around you like,
but I like that little descriptor voice that you gave right there, or your little mock of the angels right there.
Yes. You see Havasupai Falls, and it's a really steep decline. You get to catch views of it, and you're almost to the campground. Campground is just right beyond that.
That spot where you start to see Havasu Falls, and it's so beautiful. It's this just huge drop waterfall. That's about the place where I met up with Brittany and Savannah. They were like, had already set up camp and had already done a bunch of things and put their feet in the waterfall. And then they were like, where are these girls? And so when I finally saw you all, I think at that point I was just like, oh my God, we actually made it.
But that hike was really strenuous, and I honestly brought some Liquid IV. And Liquid IV is one of our favorite travel products. It keeps us hydrated while flying, traveling, and hiking Havasupai Falls.
It's full of electrolytes and hydrates you 2 times faster than water alone. We use them when flying, feeling jet lagged after a long hike, or being like Kim nearing 40 here, needing that extra hydration to get you going. They store so easily in your carry-on, backpack, day pack, or purse.
I definitely used it on this trip. I brought with me my favorite sugar-free lemon lime. I also just saw on the website they have a new raspberry melon sugar-free flavor that, ooh, I'm very interested in. Yes. They have an immune support one that I think is also really good for this hike when you're going to be out there around people and straining your immune system. You can order yours for 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com. Just type in our promo code Travel Squad Podcast when you check out and you'll get that 20% off.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So after you see Havasupai Falls, like I said, the next thing is the campground. Campground is first come, first serve. Many of the spots do have a picnic table. And going into this, we had a list of things that we wanted. We wanted to be close to a bathroom. We wanted to have a picnic table. And we wanted to have some trees that we could hang a hammock on and relax on. Bonus that we were up against a canyon wall and there was a little creek that ran through our part of the campground. So we could wash our hands and feet, especially after like doing some hikes where our feet got muddy, dusty, all of those things. I felt like our spot was really, really great. It was pretty close to like the front portion of the campground. We were probably like five campgrounds into the left and it was spacious and it had privacy too. Cause I feel like some of the camp spots that were along the creek, it's along more of a main trail and you don't have as much space and there's a lot more people like in your vicinity.
Our camp spot was good. You guys did a good job picking that out. I think one thing we were worried about when we were planning was getting that picnic table. And while not all of them have it, I will say when we went in March, there was no issue finding a spot with a picnic table. So, I mean, that could change as it gets warmer and more busy, but I think that that's not a big worry that you need to have. There's only the one water spigot, Fern Spring. We were very close to it, and I think that's smart. Unless you have more of those collapsible water storage systems, you might not need to be as close, but we found it very convenient to be that close.
Yeah, we were like two or three camp spots over from the Fern, and it made it super easy to go and fill our day packs or get water for our nightly meals, so it was really nice.
One other thing, too, the people that were by the creek, we actually had people moving their tents into our area and coming to join our party because there was a wind tunnel essentially by the creek that was causing people to want to move over. And during the weather that brings more wind, you might not want to be so close.
We were also pretty close to the ranger station. Like Kim said, it's near the campground entrance and he or she is a good source to ask about the pack mules, the helicopter, just like general questions that you might have. We kind of asked him things like on our second to last day, got some good information, and he encouraged us to go to town to like check out the helicopter situation and whatnot. And like Kim said, this is where people have left things like their propane tanks, their extra freeze-dried meals, all of those things.
But you're not supposed to.
No.
They really say pack it in, pack it out. Don't leave anything. So don't rely on that.
So I just want to chat a little bit about the bathrooms. I was a little nervous about campground bathrooms, but they were actually pretty nice. There are actually like these elevated buildings. There's usually 2 to 5 stalls per bathroom and they're compostable toilets. So we actually brought a roll of toilet paper each. And that was probably a little excessive because
I don't know about that. I feel like, you know, someone needs their own roll of toilet paper. Yes, somebody could have an accident out there and think that, like, oh man, I need extra wipes here.
I mean, we not only all brought a roll of toilet paper, but we all brought wipes. It was just unnecessary. The bathrooms were fully stocked with toilet paper the whole time.
Yeah, I think like one bathroom ran out of toilet paper, but again, like, you can go into a next stall over and get the toilet paper. The toilets, by being compostable, you do your business and then you grab a handful of like this mulch or like wood chips or whatever it is, and you just dump it in the toilet and you close the lid and it does its business. And apparently it makes it into a hummus-like soil.
Oh my gosh. When I heard hummus, I thought you were really going to say they do something like that. Like, there's obviously like no way. But what a descriptor. What a descriptor.
That's what
the mulch on top that you do to kind of mask the smell gives it a texture that looks like hummus. I'm going to think about that next time I eat hummus, and that's going to really ruin it for me.
I know. So there was like parts of the trail that were like really soft.
And like, I think it was the hummus.
And we were like, is this where they dump the hummus?
No.
But yeah, just like, bathroom was fine. There was no issues with them being like super dirty. I mean, obviously dirty with like a little bit of tracked dirt in just because of what the trail is, but they weren't like, oh,
the
it smells
didn't
like
disgust you to sit on.
Yeah, like there, oh, it doesn't smell like piss or shit. And there's like not any of that going on. So people are like respectful of the bathroom situation.
There's also no sinks, so you can't wash your hands. There's no hand sanitizer. So we did bring our own, but just keep that in mind. In the village, in the bathroom, there is a fantastic water situation. So in the cafe, there is a real bathroom with toilet seat covers, toilet paper, and running water to wash your hands with soap and hot water.
Yeah, washing my hands at the cafe was like, oh my God, this feels so good after like 3 days.
Oh, and the cafe also has Wi-Fi. When you're in the village, you can access Wi-Fi. Not that you want to, but it is there.
We did have that creek that ran through our campground spot, so I washed my hands there a lot and my feet there a lot. But camp was nice. I actually really enjoyed our spot. Savannah and I had gotten in an hour and a half before Kim and Ocedes, so Savannah and I took the initiative to set up our tents for the most part. Kim was carrying one part of our tent, but I was able to set up like the base and like the underlayer, and then we went and got water. I think we got changed, and then we're like, did something happen to them? Like, where are they? And then we finally made the decision to go to the waterfall. That's where Kim said we caught them on the trail coming down.
You know, Kim and Ocedes were just enjoying the view. They were like, you know what? I'm here. This view's beautiful. I'm going to soak it all in. I'm gonna
we did for a while.
Exactly what you did. Yeah, yeah. During those big rest breaks, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Also at camp, in a lot of blogs, it mentioned that the squirrels are like really aggressive and try to get into your food. We didn't have that situation. I don't know if it was just because of the time of year that we went, but we did bring bags to hang our food on a like rope line so that the squirrels couldn't get in. And then of course there are no trash cans at camp. So any garbage that you make from like your food or from things that you bring, you're packing that out.
Yeah, we did not see a single squirrel. At least I didn't. I didn't see any critters whatsoever. And we did get a lot of, like, the blogs really went hard on squirrels and protecting your food from it. But we didn't have that issue whatsoever. We did put our food, instead of a rat sack, which are quite expensive to purchase if you're not a backpacker and not going to use it a lot, we had dry bags that rolled closed. And we used those to store our food and then hooked them onto that rope. And they were fine. We also did keep food in our backpacks in our tent at some points of some nights. We didn't have any critters chewing at our tent or trying to get in there either.
Yeah, so I just don't know if it was like the time of year and they weren't interested, or like we just had a really good spot. But just be mindful that those are things that could possibly happen on your trip.
This is a good time to mention we have a ton of resources on our website for you squatties. This entire episode is going to have a full-length blog post with links to everything, links to all of the products that we purchased for this trip, a fully built-out guide on how we did it, and we have that for a lot of our trips. We have full itineraries that you can download, both free and paid, depending on the trip. We have trip planning worksheets, free templates for your pet sitter, guides on how to start your own podcast even. We have a bi-monthly newsletter, and I want you to go to our website, travelsquadpodcast.com, and subscribe to it because we put exclusive deals and information in there twice a month, and it goes out. So head on over and sign up while you can.
So the next day, we decided that we were going to do a 5-mile hike to Mooney and Beaver Falls.
And by the way, this is what everybody does.
Yeah.
So we didn't just decide to. This is what you're going to do.
Well, I mean, you could do it in opposite, but we're like, no, let's get the hard hike out first and then use like the third day to rest before the hike out. But yes, everyone chooses to do it in this order. It's 5 miles round trip. You're thinking 5 miles, no big deal. It's a lie. It was so hard. Let me just like preface it for you. The trail is you start at the campground, you walk a mile through the campground, and then when you get to the end of the campground, you can see down to Mooney Falls. You get like this great, beautiful overview of it.
This huge, dropping, cascading waterfall.
Turquoise against the red rocks. It's so beautiful. So we took some pictures up there. Then you start to climb down. There's a trail, but you're also kind of like going over some rocks, and then you hit a section and everyone kind of piles up at the section because you have to get through a few different tunnels. And then at the end of the tunnels, you have to climb down the side of this cliff using chains and ladders. And we got there kind of on the later side. We started our day and we're at this section probably around like 11:30, and everyone is there at that time. So I would recommend going earlier in the day, because we waited for like, I don't know, 30 minutes to an hour in line just to get to like the chains and ladder section.
I wouldn't say it was an hour.
I said 30
maybe
minutes. But by the time we got down to the bottom, it was like an hour.
Yeah, because during this tunnel, chain, ladder portion, you're going very slow.
Yes. There was a recommendation on a blog to bring gloves. I would recommend that as well. The chains and ladder portion gets pretty slippery because of where it is and where it's positioned near the waterfall. All of the mist of the waterfall falls onto this cliff edge. And so it just makes everything like wet and misty. So it's much more slippery.
It looks as scary as it is. I wouldn't recommend not doing it. You have to do it. But it's pretty wild. You go through this tunnel in the rocks, in the side of the cliff. And at the end of that tunnel, then you start to see bolted on chains into the cliff. So the chains are actually very sturdy. And then there's like these metal posts that are also stabbed
anchoring
into
them.
Yes. And those are very sturdy too. And I held on to those a lot. And then of course the ladders as you get lower. But you're literally on the side of the cliff going down. And it's scary.
And we all wore hiking sandals. Kim and I had ones with like the back strap. If you're going to wear hiking sandals, they need to have the back strap on them.
So they're Tevas, and we'll link them on our Amazon storefront because they were really good.
And the reason why we wanted to wear hiking sandals was because along this trail, there are a lot of different water and like creek crossings as well. And we wanted to be near and get in the water near the waterfall. And that's also kind of rocky. So we chose to wear like hiking sandals that we could wear with our bathing suits and while we were in the water. And I felt like that was a smart choice instead of having water shoes plus like hiking.
Yeah.
Because every time you got to a water crossing, then you'd have to like change in and out of them. So hiking sandals is the way to go.
Definitely. You don't want to be in those hiking boots and have it all get wet and everything. And two, you know, once you get down to the waterfall, you're going to be wanting to get into it. You don't want to put those on later, even if you were somehow able to keep them dry in those creek crossings. You know, it just seems like a burden on that front of things. But, you know, go to our Instagram, because of course we're going to be posting photos here of Mooney Falls. But you ladies just keep talking about like the ladders, the chains. And I don't want to discourage anybody from doing it. Obviously, I wasn't there, but of course, we've done many hikes with ladders and chains, but it'll be on our Instagram. I know you'll see what we're talking about, but also go to Google and Google image Mooney Falls. Of course, the first several images will be of the falls, but you'll get a glimpse of what they're talking about with these ladders and chains and climbing through the rocks. You'll be able to see a whole plethora of photos of what they're talking about. And even though you may hit that bottleneck of everybody trying to go down or up at the same time and like slowing you, I always love these type of hikes that have these unique experiences on how you have to actually get there. Not only do you get the view, but then you kind of, to some degree, I don't want to say bouldering because you have assistance with the chain and ladder, but it's just a fun hike because you really got to navigate your way through it, you know?
Yeah.
So when I was thinking 5 miles, I was thinking, okay, the hike will take us 2.5-3 hours. And I wasn't really thinking like we should bring lunch, but so we only packed snacks. And I think we should have brought lunch. Mm-hmm. Like you should have brought a freeze-dried meal with our jet boil and just put it in a day pack.
I saw people with PB&Js and I thought that was so smart. Like what an easy thing to pack, and it's perfect for backpacking.
Mm-hmm. So once we got to the bottom, which is at the base of Mooney Falls, we decided to continue along the trail and that we were going to hit Mooney Falls on our way back. So this part is primarily flat. You get a lot of creek sightings. You go through the water a few times.
It's really, really pretty. You see all these cascading parts of the stream, these terraces. It's gorgeous blue water the whole time. And the reason we're continuing on is because Beaver Falls is actually the hike, the waterfall section that we're trying to get to before we turn back.
Yes. You do have to go across a sketchy wooden bridge. You do have to go up and down some more ladders. Mm-hmm. Have to do a little rock climbing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where this hike got me. So on one of the rock climbing sections, I slipped a little bit. And because I was wearing the open-toed Tevas, one of my toenails, my second toe on my right foot, caught on a rock and it pulled all the way up.
So like your index toe.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So if you had clipped your toenails, it would have had less chance of catching?
Yes, I think so. So it completely pulled up. It started bleeding. There was like a whole bunch of blood in my Tevas. I ended up like rinsing my foot with my water bladder water. And it took us almost 3 hours to actually make it to Beaver Falls when we were anticipating that it would take us 3 hours total for this whole thing. But part of that is you stop to take pictures. The water's so beautiful. The first time that we did the water crossing, we started the hike wearing socks. So we had to take our socks off. Mm-hmm. One of the girls was wearing pants. She had to take her pants off. You have to cross the creeks. While you're in the creeks, you're taking pictures of yourself or your group in the water. So there's a lot of like photo opportunities and you're stopping a lot for that. Because on the way back, it took us an hour to hike back versus the 3 hours to hike there.
And honestly, that second day, that's what you're doing. So you're not in a rush. You don't have to hurry. Enjoy it. Take pictures. Bring your lunch. Like make a day out of it. You do want to get back before it gets dark. So depending on when you're there, check sunset time. But other than that, like that's your day. And what a beautiful day, right?
Yes. But I think the most comical thing on this trip was there was a sign that said Beaver Falls is 5 minutes away.
No. Then this is what I'm saying about time. It's very loose. Mileage is very loose.
Okay, they said 5 minutes, but how long was it?
With all the rock climbing and the hiking in waterfalls to get there, it was probably like another 30 to an hour.
You think so? I don't think it was. I thought it was like 15, 20 minutes away.
Well, maybe it was a little bit longer because we took a wrong turn. You see a picnic table when you get to Beaver Falls, and that's where you go down to actually get in the falls. We went to the left, and we were hiking on the side of a cliff and like look around the cliff and like there's no way down but a straight drop. So I think we went the wrong way and we had to turn back. So had we not done that, maybe 15.
So Kim, tell us about what Beaver Falls looks like.
Beaver Falls, you know, when you first see it, you're from high above. And it looks small, a terraced, tiering area of waterfalls. It's not a big drop waterfall like Mooney or Havasu. It's tiered. As you get closer and closer and closer, it gets so much bigger. And the waterfall drops are like, I don't know, 10, 20 feet. And then there's still the terraces and everything. There's really two layers to it. And then there's even a waterfall in the back, too. So it's just like a beaver dam of waterfalls. And it's so pretty.
And each terraced section makes a shallow pool that you can stand, swim, get wet in, relax in, sit in, all of those things.
You know, Kim, when I first saw photos of Beaver Falls that you ladies had posted, and of course, you know, just Googling ahead of time too of like, oh, you guys are going here. What do these falls even really look like? You know what it reminded me of? It reminds me of a natural, of course, on a much smaller scale, Grutas Tolotongo in Mexico. And even with the colors, because the water there at those hot springs kind of have this color too that mm-hmm. At Beaver Falls. So it reminds me. So if anyone knows Grutas de Tolotongo, just imagine a much smaller but natural version of that. That's kind of like how I picture it in my head.
It also reminds me of, I can't think of the name of it, but in Croatia, they have these terraced tiered waterfall areas you can swim in. that I've always wanted to go to. And it seems like a smaller version of that as well.
Absolutely.
So we did get in the water here at Beaver Falls. We got some pictures. We relaxed a little bit. We sat a little bit. Everyone is at Beaver Falls, so like you can easily chat with people. There was like this older guy who was there with his like wife, and he took a picture with the four of us girls that his wife took the picture of. Do you remember that?
Yeah. And it's funny, the people that you see here and the people that you're hiking with are people you've been seeing throughout this trip. You've been seeing them at camp. Like, they're on this journey with you. And, like, that's part of that experience of camping and this trip in particular. You've all gone through the same thing to get there. You're all at camp. You're all doing this hike the next day. And you start to form, like, connections with the people you're seeing.
You know, and I feel what you said really resonates. And I've mentioned this, like, a million times. You know, we've made good friends with people that we've met on travels, right? And that we continue to travel with or meet up and just visit with them. Mm-hmm. And people say like you spent like a small amount of time with them, but you hit the nail on the head. You experienced a life experience with these people that no one can relate to other than you guys. So how do you not get close with some right. people in a situation like that? And that's one of the most beautiful things about traveling, let alone in a nature environment like this, just really appreciating Mother Nature and Earth, and it sounds beautiful. I'm kind of jealous about that. Like I said, hindsight's 2020. I'm regretting I didn't go now.
Uh-oh.
So here, there was a lot of people here. So we had tent neighbors who had moved in like that morning, and it was a group of four girls who shared like this really big tent, and they had this inflatable mattress. But I asked them, anyone happen to have a Band-Aid? Because my toenail was like, you know, hanging on for dear life. And so someone was like, oh, yeah, I have one. And they just give that up. And then Savannah, her shoe, she was wearing like Tevas too that were a little bit older. So your shoe's on its last leg. Don't wear them to this hike because they could get trash. Her sandal fell apart. And she was like, oh, my gosh, I'm going to have to hike back in like my socks, you know. But one of the girls who we were giving water to, like the hot water to, that we made friends with, she had an extra pair of shoes that she was going to trash at the end of this trip, and she offered them to Savannah, and they fit her, and Savannah was able to hike out of this hike with using those shoes. It's a lot of camaraderie with the group that you're with and all the people that you meet along the trail. Like, everyone's like helping each other out and wanting to be helpful and like getting along, and it was really fun.
Speaking of Savannah and her shoe being broke, we posted a photo on our Instagram of you ladies on this trip. And I don't know if they're a squatty or saw it in a tag, but he said, I remember you ladies. One of you broke your shoe.
Well, he pointed out the girl on the right broke her shoe.
Yeah, he remembered Savannah.
The reason he probably remembers us is because on the hike back out, we did stop at Mooney Falls to get pictures and go into that pool. And it's Mooney Falls. So what do you think we did?
Well, I know what you did because I saw the photos, and I've been on many trips where you and Brittany and maybe somebody else, if they're there with us, decides to just have a beautiful scenic back shot, and you guys give me a full moon. I love it, you know, and you ladies did that.
Moon out there.
Full moon.
So yeah, on our way out, we did stop back at Mooney Falls, and I felt like this was a really good call because while we were there, everyone was still lined up to go back up the same ladders, chains, and tunnels you went down. But we waited pretty much until there was no line, and we took all of our pictures. There was a lot of people that were cold because of the mist coming off of the falls. And so they're like, you're crazy for getting in the water, for like taking those pictures there. But we just killed some time and enjoyed it. And then once the path was free, we were just able to climb out with like no stops.
And it is cold where the mist is hitting you as you're waiting to go up the chains. But if you go to the left to get into the pools and get a good picture in front of the waterfall, the mist isn't hitting there and it's not cold right there.
Yeah. It was really funny because Kim and I had just pulled up our pants from, you know, winning the camera. And this guy and girl come up to us and they're like, can you take our picture? And they hand me their phone. And I said, oh, of your butts? And then he was like, oh, no, no. You know, and like, it was just really fun, really funny. And I will say about the ladders and chains, I felt like it was harder to go up than it was to go down. What did you think?
I mean, difficulty wise, I think it was about the same, but it seemed scarier going up. Like if you slip and fall, I felt like the slippage possibility was scarier going up.
And usually I feel the opposite way. Like usually I feel like it's harder to get down and easier to go up, but I felt the opposite on this hike for whatever reason. But we got back pretty late. When we got back, it was probably like a little after 5. And we knew that it was going to get dark within the next like hour and a half, 2 hours. So we booked it to camp and we just had our freeze-dried meals. I think I made a meal. I think I made maybe even 2 meals this night because I was like, oh my God, we've been gone all day. Need to get rid of some of these freeze-dried pack anyways. And since we had extra, like Kim and I shared some of the meals. And you know what? The backpacking meals were pretty good. Mm-hmm. I was expecting far less quality and I was impressed.
Yeah, we did lasagna with meat sauce. I had pad thai. We did chicken Alfredo pasta. Ooh.
I did a coconut curry. Oh. And I did chicken and biscuits.
All right, so all of those things sound really delicious. Of course, if you get it at a good restaurant, we could imagine on the scale of 1 to 10 what you ladies would put that at. Given that flavor profile, but in the freeze-dried format for backpacking, on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you give it?
Like an 8 out of 10.
I mean, they weren't bad. They were pretty good. I had read some reviews saying not to put as much water in because it gets soupy. I don't agree with that. I think put the full regular amount of water. Let it sit for longer than it needs to, though, with it closed, because some of the like chicken could be a little crunchy still. So let it sit for a little longer and you're usually good. The only one that wasn't good, Ocides had a breakfast skillet that had hash brown, sausage, eggs. It wasn't good. I think maybe it should have been left longer, or it was just not.
I think it's the egg part. Anything freeze-dried eggs or powdered eggs, I think that really kind of does it. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, even the sausage was still a little crunchy and the hash browns weren't right. So I'd pass on that one. We did for breakfast, we did actually packets of oatmeal with water, and that was really good.
Yes. And then Kim had her packets of coffee as well. So that's kind of what our breakfast was. And then we'd pack up camp and go.
The cool thing about camp is that we did go to bed early. So we were going to bed at like 8 o'clock at night a lot of these nights. But before we did that, we would be around the table after we ate our freeze-dried foods. We brought out the deck of cards and we put our headlamps on and we were playing cards in the dark. And it was like just a really cool moment of friendship and nature and camping. And we did that most nights, I think.
Yeah, a little rummy action. Rummy's our go-to mm-hmm. game when we're on vacation.
Who's the rummy reigning champion right now then?
We kind of had some variation in winners.
Yeah, I think you fucked us pretty hard one of the times, Kim. Like you had a good-
Sounds about right.
Yeah, all right.
I tend to do that.
But yeah, it was just really nice. And then the girls that we had met from the previous night, they came and joined us for dinner again. So we got to know them a little bit. They actually cut their trip a little short. I think they left the following morning. So they didn't choose to stay the whole 4 days, 3 nights.
Which is a good point to mention. You don't have to stay that whole time, but your booking will
But you're paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I would recommend it because you, like this next day we're going to talk about, you need to see that stuff too.
Well, we knew that the weather was possibly going to turn and it did turn a little bit. And so people were talking about possibly leaving early.
Possible snow.
Yeah. Possible snow, rain. We had a little hail. And so even some of our group mates were talking about like leaving the day before.
Mm-hmm.
But we ultimately as a group decided that we paid for our experience there and we wanted to enjoy it to its fullest and that we wanted to have that day. So we did not hike out early.
No. And it was kind of cool that second night it did start raining. And so as we were sleeping, we could hear rain pattering on our tent and wind howling outside. And it sounds like it'd be crazy, but it was actually just a cool experience to be sleeping in nature when that's happening.
Yes, it was really, really nice. So the next day we went to the three waterfalls. We were going to Havasu, 50-foot, and Navajo. We decided to bypass Havasu first because it's the easiest one to get to, and we wanted to kind of start farther in. So we ended up starting at Navajo Falls, and all of these side trails are a little sketch. Like, you don't know if it's really a trail or not. You don't know where it's going to lead you, but you kind of just follow it anyways. And then you end up at a clearing and there's like this amazing, beautiful waterfall. How would you describe Navajo Falls, Kim?
Navajo Falls, I would say it's not a single cascading tower waterfall. It's a wide waterfall with lots of cascading falls coming down almost in a sheet, a wall of sheet. And it's not the tallest, but I would say it's, I don't know, if I had to guess, like 30 feet, 40 feet.
I mean, it's probably taller than that, but just from the distance we're at, it doesn't look super tall. But I also felt like it was surrounded by the most amount of like greenery as well.
And it was so wide too, so it had a lot of greenery to surround it.
Made it feel more like a little oasis than the other waterfalls.
Yes. It was really beautiful. But there's not a lot of like sitting area here, and you can't really get in it like you can get in the other waterfalls. So it's one of those like you see it and then you kind of move on. Then we went to 50-foot falls. Also a sketch trail to get here. There is like no real trail. We were pushing out branches from trees.
You're in a waterfall hiking to get to the viewpoint to see this one.
You can't have a lot of people on this trail either because there's nowhere for people to go.
Worth to see it, though. You're not going to stay there long at the viewpoint. You're going to kind of see it, take some pictures, and then make your way back out.
Yeah, but another good hike to wear your water sandals or your hiking sandals again, because you are standing in a waterfall at one point and your feet are going to be completely soaked.
On this day, I did have to put moleskin on my feet, so remember to pack that. Because the day before, we were hiking in sandals the whole time, so it started kind of rubbing on my feet in certain areas where the straps were, and it rubbed away some of my skin. So bring the moleskin if you're going to be wearing your sandals again on day three.
And then from here, we hiked to the village. So this was, you know, 2 miles from the original campground, but we were already partway there with going to these waterfalls. This is where we learned about how much the helicopter costs, the process to sign up. We went to the cafe. I checked my phone service. Kim got some fries and a strawberry lemonade.
Strawberry lemonade was really good. I would highly recommend it.
I really wanted to try the fry bread, but they said that they wouldn't be ready for a while. And like Kim said, time's loose. They're like, I don't know. The bread has to rise a little bit. And we don't know when it'll be ready. 30 minutes, an hour. And we're like, well, we don't have time to just like sit around. This was probably also our rainiest day. Rain would start and then stop consistently during this day.
Yep. And even though it was raining, it wasn't necessarily cold. We did have our jacket on for some of the day, took it off for other parts of the day. So we didn't let the rain stop us from doing what we needed to do. I did hear, though, that it was very cold back at the campground. Osiris went back because her knee and leg was all messed up. And so she decided just to rest it a little bit. And she said it was hailing at the campground. And she showed pictures, too, of hail in some of the chairs.
And this is probably the day that there was a snowstorm at the top of the rim. Yeah. And like the helicopter was canceled for part of the day and like they didn't start flights till much later. And they were saying like how crazy it was. And the last day as we were hiking out, people were like, how did you survive the snowstorm down there? And we're like, there was no snow down there. But yeah, like crazy how weather can change from like one spot to the next, just like bottom of the canyon, top of the canyon. Mm-hmm. Usually the bottom of the canyon's warmer than the top anyways, which I learned the first time we went to the Grand Canyon. But another thing that we learned while we were at the village is that there's a lot of dogs and they like to be pet and they like to follow you. And if you find a dog in the village that does not have a collar or tag, you can actually adopt them and take them home. Almost happened. Savannah almost took a dog home.
There's no adoption process. You just take it.
Yes. And we actually saw someone do that. They had like a little, I don't know, 6-month-old little pup that they adopted. And they had it on this like makeshift leash.
I would have loved to see them carry that in the backpack out, or how they carry the dog out.
Dog hikes out.
Well, I guess if it's 6 months, though, I wonder if it can really do that 10 miles without getting tired. But of course, I know puppies grow big. It depends on the breed. But like, I'm just saying, my thought process is like, oh, I wonder how they got the puppy out.
It was a solid, like, medium-sized dog.
Oh, okay, so then there you go. Kim's right. It's hiking out.
Yeah.
After spending some time in the village, we decided to hike back. Havasu Falls is the one big cascading waterfall that's nearest to the campground, nearest to the bathrooms. It's pretty easy to get to, and it's gorgeous. So we definitely wanted to get some pictures there. If we brought 2 swimsuits, you know we have to get pictures in 2 swimsuits. Not going to not use it.
That put you up to 50 pounds.
I know. So we went there. We got some pictures, did a little cold plunge in there. How cold was it when you were sitting in there for 10 minutes?
You know, I think you were colder on the outside than we were sitting in the
with water. All that wind coming out.
Yeah, like you were cold because it was like windy and like misty and wet. But once we were actually physically submerged in the water, it was cold. And I'm not going to say it wasn't cold, but I think it was not as cold than being on the outside. So we survived, got our cold plunge in while Kim just sat there shivering with her Turkish towel wrapped around her. And it just really soaked up the last bit of Havasupai Falls because we knew that we were going to be hiking out really early the next day. And I think it was a really nice and peaceful ending to our day. Later in the day, no one really goes to the waterfalls, so we had most of it to like ourselves, you know?
Back at camp, I want to mention something that I brought as my one luxury item. Well, one of many that ended up getting packed in. But I wanted to make a cake for the campground. We had had a cake made for us on our Inca Trail hike from our travel tour guide company. And I was like, you know what? I think I can do this. So I bought the mug cake packaging, the frosting, and I brought that with us. And I made a cake in a pan from the Jetboil flame for all of us. And how was it, Brittany?
It was giving campfire smoky vibes, but it was pretty good.
It was giving toasted marshmallow a little bit, but it was actually really good. Funfetti cake.
Funfetti.
Oh, I love funfetti. Oh, my God.
Who doesn't?
I know. That sounds delicious.
Yeah, so the bottom got a little burnt, yeah. But the top part was pretty good. We actually didn't eat it all the first night, so we came back for round two the next day.
Yeah, I'm proud of myself. I made a cake on the trail.
I think next time we shouldn't put as many packets in the pan.
Yeah. I put 3 packets in because I wanted to make cake for everybody. But if we had just done 1 or 2, I don't think the bottom would have burnt. It might not have been giving as much of toasted marshmallow, and it would have been really good. So the next morning, this is day 4. We have to hike out. We wanted to be on the road by 11 a.m. because we still had an 8-hour drive back to San Diego. I had a flight to catch at 8 p.m. Savannah had her flight at 9 p.m. So we were really crunched for time here. And Brittany said we woke up at 3:30 in the morning. It was still dark out. We used our headlamps to pack everything up, get you two on the road by around 4:15-ish. And then Ocides and I started hiking out around 5:15.
Yeah, I will say it is important to pack your bag as much as you can the night before and get it as organized as you can the night before.
Yes.
Before pulling it out of your tent and then finishing deassembling your tent. So that was really helpful that we did that in advance. And then that morning, all we really had to do was like roll up our sleeping bags, scrunch up our sleeping pads, and then break down the tent.
Mm-hmm. I thought it would be a little weird hiking at night, but it wasn't bad actually at all.
No, my headlamp gave me plenty of light. It was dark. What time was sunrise, Kim? I think sunrise was at like
6-ish.
Yeah, 5:30 or 6. So Savannah and I hiked for a solid like hour and a half in the dark. And we didn't get lost, so.
It's like the morning when we woke up from Machu Picchu. They woke us up really early. It was still dark. We started hiking, and then the sun rises as you go. There's something beautiful about that, you know, regardless of the fact that it sucks and you're hiking, especially if you have to wake up early and the hike is strenuous, but having your body moving out in nature as the sun rises, I think is actually really, really nice.
Yeah.
Someone call me.
One thing I will say that I didn't mention before that I brought with me was hiking poles. And I used them on the hike in and I used them on the hike out. And I thought that they were legit, like for sure helpful. When you're going downhill initially, when you start the hike, that's a lot of weight on your knees and your feet and all of that. And then like some of the steps are awkward because of the rocks. So having the hiking pole to kind of like move some of that weight and put your weight on it more slowly, I think was helpful for me. And then hiking out, of course, my pack was lighter. Kim did the honors of taking the tent and the helicopter, so it took some weight off of my pack. All of our food was gone. I didn't bring as much water out, so my pack was a little bit lighter. But even going uphill, especially for the very last portion where you're hiking from the bottom of the canyon to the rim, it was really nice to have the hiking poles.
I used OCD's hiking poles a little bit on that hike out that last day, and it made a huge difference. I didn't bring my own, and she said she bought hers on Amazon for about $20. So we definitely have them on our Amazon packing list, and I would 100% recommend them. knowing what I know now and the strain on my knee, I would definitely bring hiking poles and I would also bring a knee brace.
Didn't OCDs get a knee brace from one of our tent?
Yeah, that camaraderie. One of our tent neighbors wasn't going to use her knee brace and she let her have it.
Our tent neighbors, they were luxury. They were like pack mule in, helicopter out people.
They had that full tent, the air mattress. They had chairs. They had tea kettle. They did it right.
They also were at the cafe. They got these big ass burritos that were like huge. So they were having a great time.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, I have no regrets about taking the helicopter out. I don't think that I would have survived if I tried to hike it out. I definitely would not have made my flight. And it was kind of cool, like, to be in line. Again, you're talking to everybody who's there. You're getting to know people, where they're from, their dogs. Like, you go to the cafe when it opened. And when we were in the cafe, they said, oh, they're now taking names. So luckily, I had a friend that we'd made who came to tell us that. So we like ran back so we can get our names on the list since we had already been in line. And yeah, it was when that helicopter showed up, it was like, oh, like
just like pretty.
Yes. That's how I felt getting on that helicopter and being able to fly out.
You know, the night before at the dinner table, Kim was like, so are you going to leave me your car keys? And I was like, no. And she was like, what? You're not going to leave me your car keys? I was like, no, I'm going to beat you. She's like, you're definitely not going to beat me.
Well, I do want to say sorry for snapping at you, but at that time we were planning to both leave at 5. And when we also were told that the helicopter started at 8. So under those pretenses, we definitely would have been out first. But then you all started to leave at 4 and the helicopter with their loose timing didn't start till like 9:30. So it all worked out and you guys were there like 15 minutes early.
And the last thing I want to say about this is, you know, we stopped and chatted with people along the trails at camp whenever we passed people that like we were seeing this whole time. And we met this girl on the trail. Her name was Kenzie and she wants to start a podcast. And so we told her we were making this episode and we were going to give her a shout out and to encourage her to make her own podcast. So I hope she's listening in and in the podcast prepping process as we speak.
And we have a guide on our website on an 8-part course on how to start your own podcast. So Kinsey, go to travelsquadpodcast.com and get your guide, girl.
Well, all in all, it sounds like you ladies had an epic time. Again, starting to have a little bit of regret FOMO about the fact that I did miss out a little bit. But nevertheless, I'm really excited that you ladies had it as a girls' trip. It sounds really fun, that type of camaraderie, plus the experience as a whole. So maybe we won't go back here as a squad, but I'm ready for that backpacking trip as a squad. Maybe we won't do 10 miles for Kim. Maybe we won't make it into a canyon either, but something with a little bit less of a hike. Maybe shorter on the days, backpacking in. Sounds really fun. Can't wait to do it.
You know, I don't know if I'll be backpacking again.
Oh, yeah. As soon as Kim took a deep breath, I was like, oh, I already know what she's about
now,
to
do. Now, if it is a shorter amount of miles, we talked about that maybe, but it would have to be for something as epic as this. I'm not just going to go backpacking just anywhere. It has to be for something that's so sacred, so beautiful, so coveted, that it makes the pain of carrying your pack worth it.
Well, I'm sorry that spending the night with your squad mates is not worthy
enough. We can do that at luxury hotel.
Like it's doing.
You know, I had made one of our Instagram posts. It was a picture of us at Havasu Pie Falls. And I said, we had our first. And then in parentheses, I put, and Kim's last backpacking trip. I already knew your feelings on backpacking.
I could be convinced. You know, enough time passes, you forget about the pain. But
you do. They say that when you travel, a lot of things can go wrong. But in the end, you're not going to remember all of those bad things. Or when you do, it's going to be a laughing moment. Yes. It's not going to feel as painful as it was when you were in that moment.
Yeah.
Well, not only that, of course, we're recording an episode right now and you're saying your experience on it, Kim. Don't really want to backpack again, but I know you would not encourage anybody to not do this.
Oh,
right?
No.
So
there's
that.
I highly recommend you do it. And I'm so thankful and so grateful that we got to go when we did, that we're young and we don't have, you know, families to worry about and we can just unplug completely for 4 days and everything's fine back at home. And I might not ever go back there, probably likely will not. And so just if you have a chance or if you can make it, I highly encourage everyone to go.
Yeah, it's like a one in a lifetime experience trip. Like, I mean, people obviously go more than that sometimes, but like going there once, you feel really satisfied with the experience.
Right.
It was amazing. I highly recommend this trip. And if you have any questions about it, you can always DM us as well.
And then last thing I'll say, go now because it's not guaranteed to always be there. It closed during COVID, and then they had these crazy mudslides that destroyed a lot of the camping area, and it was closed for a lot longer. It barely opened again in 2023, so it was closed for 3 years. It's monsoons over there in Arizona, so it could easily flood out, and they could close it down again. And it's an Indian reservation. They don't have to keep it open. They could close it down one day, so get on it. See it while you can. That's what we always say. And thanks, Squatties, for tuning into our episode this week. Hopefully you're inspired to visit Havasupai Falls. If you do go, make sure to let us know on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok at Travel Squad Podcast, and send us in your questions of the week.
If you found the information in this episode to be useful, or if you thought we were just plain funny, please be sure to share it with a friend that would enjoy it too. And as always, please subscribe, rate and review our podcast, and tune in every Travel Tuesday for new episodes.
Stay tuned for next week's episode. We have some more amazing adventures and tips in store for you.
Bye, Squatties.